Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. Our program is devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society, to those of you like me who've come to know that there is something dreadfully wrong, even destructive, about religion and politics, media reporting, military invasions, and economic schemes. We realize that these institutions are part of the problem. They are not part of the solution. So instead of merely presenting the news, our mission will be to understand what is causing the tragedies that are besieging our planet, while predicting how these events will influence our world if we don't stand up to them. And that is why in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides hope, the only reliable response in an exceedingly troubled world. Words, wisely wielded, provide the answer for everything that ails us, from economic ruin to terrorism, from religious myths to political hypocrisy. If you agree or disagree, if you'd like to participate in this program, our number is toll-free, 877-300-7645. CNN reported early this morning that the partner of Glenn Greenwald, if that name doesn't ring a bell, Glenn Greenwald is the fellow who first broke the NSA spying story. He works for the Guardian newspaper. It was the PRISM aspect of that story was broke by the Washington Post. But the first article from Edward Snowden was published under Glenn Greenwald's column for the Guardian newspaper. Well, his partner, who broke the story, was held at London's Heathrow Airport for nearly 9 hours. He was reportedly just passing through the airport on his way home to Brazil after leaving Berlin. So the UK is becoming America's lapdog. Before releasing him, authorities seized Miranda's laptop, cell phone, video game consoles, and USB sticks. This is the quote. "This is obviously a rather profound escalation in their attacks on the news gathering process and journalism," he said. "It's bad enough to prosecute, to imprison sources. It's worse still to imprison journalists who report the truth. But to start detaining family members and loved ones of journalists is simply despotic. Even the mafia had ethical rules against targeting the family members of people they felt threatened by." Yes, the U.S. government has stooped to a level beneath that of the mafia. It is stunningly reprehensible that those who thought that breaching the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and ignoring its safeguards against unreasonable search and seizure still have jobs, that they haven't been impeached. They violated their oaths of office. It doesn't matter if they're head of the NSA, CIA, any government agencies, including the DEA, the Justice Department, that is using this improperly gathered information. Doesn't matter which agency. If you're head of one of those agencies and you've used it, you know about it, you haven't tried to stop it, then you ought to be impeached. And if you're like Clapper, who lied about it to Congress, you ought to be charged with perjury and convicted. We ought to be holding parades for Edward Snowden, a man who still has a conscience, who knew what his agency was doing was wrong. And yet we have buffoons on both sides of the aisle pretending that this was an appropriate thing to do and that we ought to be able to, at any time, detain journalists, steal their laptops, steal anything that they have on them, do whatever we want to do just because, what, we're paranoid as a nation? Is that what it's come down to? Or we've become such a bully that we don't think that we have to pay attention to the rules that govern civil behavior. This is a related story. Talks about gets right to the root of the realization that America is no longer a moral country. For many years, the United States has had a growing problem in its criminal justice system. The United States is number one in the world when it comes to incarceration, by far. In 2009, for example, for every 100,000 citizens, 760 Americans were in prison. Now, that doesn't count the number that are in jail, just in prison. And that 760 as a percentage of 100,000, which is 0.75%, doesn't take into account the 25% of the population, those under the age of 18, no matter what crime they commit, can't go to prison. The number in terms of percentage of adults, Americans, that are imprisoned is well over 1% in prison. And there's no country even close to us. I mean, that's five times the incarceration rate of America's lapdog, Great Britain. It's eight times the rate of Germany. Eight times the rate of a nation like South Korea. 12 times the rate of incarceration in Japan. This trend began about 40 years ago. We've had a lot of trends in America that date back to about that same period of time. It is when political correctness finally held the ultimate sway on young people's minds. In 1970, state prisons had a combined total of 174,000 inmates. By 2009, they had 1.4 million, an eightfold increase. You know, an 8% increase would be meaningful. An eightfold increase? Unfathomable. And these correctional systems cost a lot of money, nearly $80 billion a year, more than the gross domestic product of entire nations like Croatia, Tunisia, for example. Federal prisons account for about 14% of our total inmates. In these prisons, the most serious charge for nearly half of all inmates is a drug offense. Now, I've shared this with you before, and it's just a matter of curiosity, perhaps. I'm not political. I used to be a conservative Republican, flag-waving patriot, pro-military hawk, and now I disavow every bit of that. And I do so because I realize that the Republicans have actually been worse in almost every important aspect of governance than the Democrats. The only thing the Republicans have going for them is better rhetoric. But that's what makes them more dangerous, because they lull the nation into believing that they're going to do the right thing and then do the wrong thing. But if I were to be political, I would be a libertarian. And there is one aspect of libertarian politics that is the principal thing that separates most Republican conservatives who have recognized it's time to give up on their political party from becoming a libertarian. It happens to be the legalization of drugs. Their value system can't absorb that. But yet, our value systems ought to be based on choice and of activating people's nesama. We spoke on Friday about the value of this gift that God gave uniquely to humankind, a nesama, a conscience. We ought to let people know that there are alternatives to drugging themselves. But the choice to drug oneself, so long as you're not in a motor vehicle endangering others or operating a dangerous piece of equipment, ought to be legal. That would thin out half of the federal prison population. Something that we ought to be aware of. Now, in state prisons, we're only 20% of the only 20% of the inmates have a drug offense as their most serious charge. Now, That doesn't mean, by the way, that only 20% of state prisoners are there because of drugs. No. What that means is that the most serious charge is not drugs. Now, if, and this is the issue with making drugs illegal, you empower illegal activity. The prices are higher when something is illegal, and it makes the user more likely to commit a violent crime to get them. And because the distribution is not legal, those who engage in it, because of the enormous monies that are available, are typically armed and deadly. And so if you commit a violent crime while either under the influence of drugs or while selling drugs or while trying to steal the money to buy drugs, then your most serious crime isn't drug possession, but the murder or robbery. But it still all goes down to the realization that it's drug-related. Now, here's an interesting aspect according to this article. The federal prison population has increased every year since 1980. The federal prison population continued to increase, while the state prison populations have been declining in recent years. Now, we had a series of days where we reported on how the NSA data that is being illegally seized in America was being used to game the justice system. And we ought to be very concerned about that, particularly since state prison populations are declining and federal prison populations are escalating. And we now know that there is an agency outside of Washington, D.C., that is specifically designed to use the improperly gained data from the NSA to begin criminal proceedings against American citizens. You know, if we continue to incarcerate, often wrongly, Americans who are willing to put their head above the crowd, if we wish to go after the likes of Bradley Manning or Edward Snowden, and if we fill our prisons with those that still have an operative conscience, then everyone will be enslaved to this government. While you're free, now is the time to stand up, be accountable, make a difference. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Speaking of drugs, I have a confession to make. I did injure myself over the weekend, and I'm taking a form of Vicodin to try to numb the pain in my back between now and the time that I can get it treated after our program today. So while I'm very, very seldom ever take any kind of pain medication for any reason, I am this morning. So if I do stumble and trip over my own tongue, which is I'm prone to do from time to time, I do have an excuse this morning. But I will do my best through this process. The item in the news that we were focused on Friday continues to be tragic. Another 24 Egyptians have been killed in the uprising between the Muslim Brotherhood and the military government of Egypt. This time, it's 24 policemen. They were killed in an ambush by Mujahideen, Islamic jihadists. They were killed this morning north of in the north part of the Sinai. The reason that that is particularly concerning is that when the Muslim Brotherhood gained control of Egypt, there are two very profound things that changed. One of those is that that cops, Christians, became fair game, and their churches and homes were burned, and they were murdered at a frightening rate. The other thing that changed was that Egypt had been given the Sinai back by Israel. You know, they lost the Six-Day War. And if Israel had not been throttled back by the United States, Egypt would be a colony of Israel. But after the war, Israel kept the Sinai. And the United States, Jimmy Carter, thought that that was improper. He hates Jews. He's extraordinarily anti-Semitic. And so he wanted the Jews to give the Sinai back to Egypt, which they did. And the trade, now here's Egypt lost the war. And they get the land back that they had confiscated from them because they lost the war. And Egypt and Israel had now a buffer. But the United States agreed to pay Egypt over $1 billion a year and also to give them this land back. And it was all just for promises of peace. So here now we're in a situation where the Muslim Brotherhood comes to into power. The first rally when they became legal again in Egypt after the yoke of the prior military junta was broken was death to Israel. Millions of Egyptians in Tahrir Square and the public squares across Egypt, all in unison, death to Israel. And so what they've done is that they've allowed the enormous influx of weapons that were provided by Qatar and indirectly by the United States to aid the jihadists, the mujahideen that took over Libya, to be distributed in the Sinai. And it has turned into literally hell on earth. The prime business of the Sinai now is organ confiscation. They'll take innocent people and they'll chop out their kidneys, the liver, whatever organ has the highest price on the international market. And of course the reason that they're interested in money is to buy weapons and to deploy them against Israel. And now they are killing one another. I have long wondered how in the world we're going to, with particularly with the uprisings throughout the Islamic world that has become a Islamic Reformation, how do we get to 2026, the fall of 2026, when the tribulation begins and into 2027 when the Magog War starts and Team Islam attacks Israel again in unison? How do we get how do we delay that the inevitable that long? Not how do we delay, because we're not going to delay it, but just how in the world is it going to take that long before Team Islam decides, you know, we're enraged, we've created a mess, we need to blame somebody, let's go attack Israel? And the answer now has become obvious, and the answer is coming to us in the most obvious of all prophecies. One of the very earliest prophecies in the Torah, speaking of Ishmael's descendants, today's Muslims. Their hands shall be raised against their brother, and their brother's hands shall be raised against them. They're so occupied killing each other that they can't be bothered right now killing Jews. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. And one last concluding comment as it relates to Egypt. I had said on Wednesday when this erupted in Egypt and they were talking about having a score of people dead, that the death toll of just this phase of the protest would exceed 1,000. Well, it's the government's reported figures, which have always lagged the Mujahideen, the Muslim Brotherhood's numbers by a considerable amount, are now reporting 850 people dead. Of those, 70 of them are soldiers and police who have been firing live ammunition at the crowds, running them over with bulldozers. And so we're about 780 civilians, 70 soldiers and police. That would be through yesterday evening. This is an interesting comment. The Republican Party has resolved to boycott any 2016 presidential debates that are sponsored by either CNN or NBC. And the reason for that is because those networks are both planning to produce special programs on Hillary Clinton. Now, Hillary Clinton is widely suspected to seek the Democratic nomination this next time around. And so CNN and NBC want to do their part and to give her her PT-109 moment. Now, the fact that this woman hasn't accomplished anything that would be considered valuable is another story altogether. But nonetheless, the Republicans are saying, you know, that's gaming the system. Delegates to the meeting of the Republican National Committee voted for a resolution, including the boycott, and said that the programs on Hillary Rotten Clinton would be little more than extended commercials promoting former Secretary Clinton. Now, imagine under her watch, you not only have Benghazi, but you have the destruction of Egypt. You have the civil war in Syria. You have a civil war re-erupt now in Iraq. You have the disasters that are taking place around the Islamic world. Tunisia was another of those that fell apart on her watch. And so under her watch, the world that was the catalyst for the next world war, the tinderbox, exploded. The RNC also resolved that it would require that any future debates have appropriate moderators. By appropriate moderators, what they're looking for is that in the second of the three presidential debates, might have been the second or could have been the third of the three between Romney and Obama, the woman who was the moderator decided that she should contribute to the debate, and she lied on behalf of Obama. It was the issue on whether Obama called the Benghazi attack a terrorist attack or whether he said that it was the product of the Christian film and therefore a spontaneous crowd behaving badly. And she intervened on behalf of the president, told Romney, you know, you're wrong. He did say it, and turns out she was wrong. So it would have been wrong for her even to interject, but to interject and to be wrong, yes, indeed, we need appropriate moderators, something that will be difficult to find amongst today's journalists. This is an interesting story out of Reuters. The United States, of course, is on the wrong side in Syria. We ought not be on either side because they're both rotten, but we are most certainly on the wrong side if you were just to view the two opposing groups with a bit of discernment. UN Human Rights Chief Navi Pillay said on Friday that she wanted an independent investigation into an apparent massacre that was carried out by Syrian opposition forces in the town of Khan el-Asal. Now, there is nothing apparent about the massacre, and there's nothing that needs investigation into who was the cause of the massacre. The video that has been released shows a group of Islamic jihadists. They happen to be a group that calls themselves supporters of the Islamic Caliphate, is what they call themselves, gloating over a pile of 30 bodies, young men that were piled up against a wall. They collectively killed over 100 people, mostly civilians, during a rebel offensive in Aleppo. And they were gloating over killing. You know, as we've said so many times before, Muhammad couldn't give his Muslims a reason to live, so he gave them a reason to die. So over 100,000 have died in this conflict thus far. Initially, of course, all of the atrocities were blamed on the human rights abuses by Assad's forces. But the reality has been that there have been far more human rights abuses of rapes, robberies, grotesque murders perpetrated by the rebels. As bad as Assad is, and he is one of the worst dictators in modern history, those that are opposing him are far worse. And this is the problem. It has become a proxy war. Now, it's interesting that when this war first erupted, almost 2 years ago, I began to call it a proxy war right from the beginning, because it was obvious that this war was taking place because the United States invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran. Previously, the Syrian government had its primary benefactor being Iraq, even though Assad was of the Alawite clan, which is associated with Shia Islam. He's not really a Muslim. And so Saddam Hussein, who was a Sunni, tribally, he really wasn't a Muslim. You had two secular dictators, both of whom had an affinity for the Ba'ath Party, which was very similar to Adolf Hitler's Nazi Party. And they were mutually supportive. But the American government decides that, hey, I got this really great idea. Why don't we invade Iraq and depose Saddam Hussein, and we'll give democracy a chance, not being able to count and realize that if we do that, the Shias in Iraq are going to elect politicians who are controlled by the Shiite mullahs in Tehran, and we're going to take Iran's only enemy and give them that nation, which then changed the power structure such that now Iran controls Syria. And the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and the Qataris hate that because they view, as Sunni Muslims, they view Shia Islam as their enemy. And so we created the environment for this proxy war. The United States' moronic decision, immoral decision, catastrophically misguided decision to invade Iraq is what led to this war. And now all it is a proxy war between Sunni and Shia Muslims, a bold-faced on that regard, but to a more serious concern, you've got the United States and Europe backing the rebels and Russia and China backing Assad. Of course, the various players are in their various positions, not because of anything other than oil. China and Russia have cut their oil deals with Iran because they have pipelines that can capitalize on the oil and natural gas reserves in the Caspian Sea. But as it relates to the United States and to Europe, they're mostly dependent upon Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Qatar and other countries like that. And so, depending on where you get your imported fix of oil, is to where the loyalties have broken down in this war. Well, so the Saudi Arabians have thought that, well, you know, we really want the rebels to prevail and to shut down the influence of Iran, so they now have been supplying these rebels with anti-tank and missiles, as well as surface-to-air missiles. And the recent flow of Saudi-backed arms represents, now, according to the Sauds, the slow pace of progress by the rebels. Well, they're losing badly. And that they say, and we have a concern that Al-Qaeda-linked groups could exploit the stalemate. There are no Al-Qaeda-linked groups. They're just fundamentalist jihadists. They're mujahideen. The Al-Nusra Front, the Victory Front, is not an agency of Al-Qaeda. They're just fundamentalist Muslims of the Sunni variety and therefore born out of the Muslim Brotherhood. And it's exactly like Iraq all over again, in the sense that Al-Qaeda had a 0% presence in Iraq before the American invasion. Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were arch enemies. And so there was no Al-Qaeda presence in Iraq. George Bush lied when he said that was one of the two justifications for invading Iraq. Bold-faced lie. Literally no influence whatsoever. They were arch enemies. But once America was there and we toppled the enemy of Osama bin Laden, then there was a presence and an influence of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. The same thing is true here. Saudis are saying, boy, unless we have a swift victory on behalf of these mujahideen, that Al-Qaeda is going to take advantage of the void. Al-Qaeda had no presence in Syria prior to turning this into a proxy war. Nations are continuing to make artificial enemies, like America's war on terrorism, so that they can control their population. People make sacrifices when they think that their nation is at war. And so the nations now are creating imaginary enemies. The Saudi-financed missile shipments, by the way, are Russian. And there's a really an interesting dialogue that's taking place right now between Saudi Arabia and Russia. But they are Russian weapons. And they are supplying them through Jordan. Now, Jordan up to this point has been neutral because Jordan doesn't have the wherewithal to be anything other than a doormat for Syria. And the Syrian government has said, you know, Jordan, if you decide that you want to play here and intervene, then it's going to be, well, they said you'd be playing with fire. So the Jordanians now are being made complicit in all of this, and they're the ones that are feeding these new weapons to the Mujahideen. And there's nothing that says peace more than giving an enraged, murderous group of people more sophisticated weapons than they had previously. We will return to Shattering Myths in the last segment of the news reporting for this morning after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I do want to underscore the reason that we're reporting all of the rather depressing news out of the Islamic world. It is obvious based upon the rage that you're seeing in Egypt, even now in Tunisia, certainly in the postage stamp fiefdoms of the United Arab Emirates, where protests are being put down violently, in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, that the rage has become extraordinarily deadly. And this rage, which is born out of Islam, is not going to be contained to those countries. Now, it is important that we recognize, as a non-Islamic country, where Muslims make up less than 5% of the population of this country, that there is nothing we can do to resolve the problems in Syria or Egypt or Tunisia or Iraq or Afghanistan. All we can do is make the situation worse. We can intervene and enrage them ever more against us. And so the best thing for Americans to do is to discourage their government from intervening. Don't give the Pakistanis any more money or weapons. Don't give the Afghanis, the Iraqis, the Egyptians. Stop supplying weapons to the Islamic world. And we are by far the largest supplier of weapons to the Islamic world. We supply Team Islam 24 times more weapons than we do Israel. But it's time that we as a nation recognize that we ought not be involved in that part of the world. Everything we have done has turned out badly. In fact, our invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan were suicidal. It's just like we had suicide bombed our own country by having done those two invasions. But it's not just that what we're doing is counterproductive, but we're squandering our resources. And so it's time that we stand up to our government and say, we don't want America involved in those issues. We don't want Americans supplying weapons or money to Islamic governments. And by the same token, America ought not be dictating to Israel that it needs to give up land and housing developments to appease these murderous people. We can't solve the problems that exist there. The problems are Islamic in origin. This is an interesting story. Dateline Washington. The National Security Agency violated privacy rules protecting the communications of Americans and others on domestic soil 2,776 times over a one-year period, according to an internal audit leaked by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. Now, he did not leak this document just now. He provided this document along with the stash of documents to the Washington Post and to the Guardian well over a month ago. They just elected not to publish it. And so when the NSA is saying, oh, you know, we have internal checks and balances, and we just, you know, where this is all congressional approved, and we have court orders and court approval and all of this oversight. You know, the truth is that they knowingly have even broken what little rules they have established relative to spying. The largest number of episodes, 1,900, are what the NSA is trying to write off as roamers. Those are cell phones that were being wiretapped without any court order overseas, that when somebody came to America, they just continued to wiretap their phones, even though to wiretap a phone in America, you're supposed to have a search warrant. They are required, according to the law. What's interesting, too, is that the reason for the large spike in the number of cell phones that were being wiretapped without a warrant for foreigners traveling into America on this particular admission by the NSA was because Chinese citizens were visiting friends and family in the United States for the Chinese Lunar New Year holiday. Now, I'd like to ask you, folks, how many, what percentage of the terrorist attacks in America have been perpetrated by Chinese celebrating a Lunar New Year holiday? You know, the NSA says we need to do this because we need to keep you safe from terrorist acts. I want you to tell me, how many terrorist acts have been perpetrated by Chinese businessmen, women, and their family? I mean, it's all a house of cards, and the deeper you dig, the closer you look, the more malfeasance you see. We'll be back in a moment.